You need a cadence of films. You need that momentum, people going to the movies, seeing trailers, feeling good about being at the theater and saying, you know what, I'm going to do this again. And when that halts, it's harder for us as a business.
This is the Box Office Podcast. I'm Danny Luria, the editorial director of Box Office Pro, the pulse of theatrical exhibition. And in this week's episode, we are going to be going over the latest at the box office. Now that we're back from CinemaCon, a quick update on what we can expect this coming weekend from a number of new releases hitting theaters and where some of those holdovers are going to be ranking. And then later on in our feature segment, we've got an interview with Greg Marcus, the CEO of the Marcus Corporation, parent company of Marcus Theaters, the number 5 circuit in North America and number 4 in the United States. Greg reacts to everything that happened at CinemaCon, including some of the comments from that panel session between Matt Maloney from Puck News and Adam Aron, the CEO of AMC Theaters. An interesting perspective on some of the points raised during that session that is coming up in our feature segment and the second half of this episode. But let's get started here. We've got Rebecca Pauly, deputy editor of Box Office Pro, with me, and Chad Kennerk, our staff writer here on the edit. Guys, you flew back from Vegas Friday. My flight was delayed 5 hours on the way out. How about you guys?
Well, I heard our colleague, Malcolm McMillan, who's at the box office company, Scottish. Didn't his flight get delayed by like 2 days?
Yes, he heads our Scottish branch over in Glasgow. He got delayed significantly. I think he got home like Sunday afternoon. Chad, did you have a horrible flight back?
It wasn't bad. I had like an hour delay, but I got some work done during that time.
We were working our butts off at CinemaCon, and in the meantime, movies were coming out.
Let's go over some of the main headlines of what's been going on in the marketplace, because Rebecca, a major studio hitting a $1 billion mark worldwide in April.
Yeah, not only Warner Brothers hitting that $1 billion mark, definitely the first studio of the year to reach that mark, of course, that combines both domestic and international grosses. They became the first studio to milestone this year, and this is also the quickest that Warner Brothers has ever reached that $1 billion mark overseas. They did it in 15 weeks. Previously, the quickest they'd managed was 17 weeks. So, I mean, definitely, I think particular films are a big factor here. Dune Part 2, Godzilla X Kong, the new
and
Empire.
And that one overperformed, by the way. That one had a huge opening weekend that we didn't get to cover here because of the CinemaCon coverage. Opened to $80 million, well above every forecasting expectation it had.
And as of now, it is the second highest grosser of the Warner Brothers Godzilla, you know, MonsterVerse franchise. It has $159 million right now domestically, whereas Godzilla, the 2014 one with Aaron Taylor Johnson, topped out at $200.6 million. So definitely an overperformance there. Definitely premium formats have been a main factor in the success. I think both of those two particular films, Godzilla X Kong and Dune Part 2, and just Warner Brothers reaching that.
We had a record opening weekend from a specialty player, A24. And in our Sunday write-up, we were chatting as we were looking at these numbers. The conversation came up, should we be treating A24 as a mid-major if they release more movies that earn the way Civil War is earning? Because it's a record opening weekend for the specialty outfit.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said there that they're moving in that direction. They did open to $25.7 million on around 3,800 screens. That is their highest opening. Previously, that record was held by Ari Aster's Hereditary, which opened to $13.5 million. This is, I think, particularly notable. It's been a divisive film, a B-minus cinema score, which is...
Ooh, that's not good.
If you're, in a high school math class, B minus isn't so bad, but if it's a cinema score, typically they do tend to be A or higher. Only a 76% approval score on Rotten Tomatoes from the audience side of things. But I definitely think this is a case of like, the more people are talking about this movie.
They're talking about it, but we also
they're talking
have to
about
step
what
back.
Are its politics, what are not its politics.
It's keeping it in
the zeitgeist.
Let's step back from these cinema score things, guys, because I think our colleague Russ Fisher has a really good way of describing cinema scores. It doesn't mean how much audiences like the movie. It just means how reflective of their expectations the movie was. Did it meet what the marketing promised it would be. And the marketing for this one was, let's say, leaned into the culture war element right now.
I heard it was quite different from what the film actually ended up being in the sense of, definitely, I think people went in expecting something that was more politically driven than something that's more about photojournalism and war photography.
You ended up getting an Alex Garland movie. You paid a ticket to see an Alex Garland movie released by A24. You got that. You didn't get 1980s Red Dawn remake that you wanted to see, maybe that was marketed.
I mean,
by
when
A24.
I saw Annihilation, I didn't expect to see some good kind of monster movie. I went in expecting to see weird, and I got weird, and I'm thankful for it.
If you want to see a journalism movie released by a director that makes you work a little bit harder than a lot of mainstream folks, that is distributed by a specialty outfit, that is what Civil War is. But the audience expectation did not align to that. And I think that's what we're getting on
the
CinemaScore.
But that didn't affect it.
Well, it didn't affect it on opening weekend. It didn't affect it on opening weekend. I think it's going to have a big impact on the on the future weekends.
Well, it's definitely helped. I mean, the discourse around it has helped convince me to make that jump. And that after CinemaCon, I mean, in the weeks leading up to it, it's so crazy. I have so much to catch up on. And now that I have a subscription program, I actually can. Eric went and saw The First Omen. I've been hearing very good things about that one, that like, if it was just released as a kind of a IP agnostic horror movie, then it would go perfectly well just on those merits. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of movies on the market there. Things have hit, things have not hit. We heard a lot of excitement over the first trailer for Dev Patel's Monkey Man. Obviously, Jordan Peele's production company stepped in, had Universal save the film from a Netflix release, put it out to theaters. I think it got a lot of buzz coming out of South by Southwest. It didn't translate. It didn't open well. It felt like a rock in its second weekend.
By its second weekend, it was out of the top five already.
The chatter there online indicated something that wasn't there for a general audience. And I think that's what my concern is with the box office on Civil War. I think this is, we can't look at the record opening weekend and just see it in a silo, right? In a vacuum. Yeah. We have to understand that as part of, this is a movie that's being marketed towards people in shopping malls all over the country, marketed in a way that no other A24 title, maybe with the exception of Everything Everywhere All at Once and its expansion. This is a very different title they're marketing in a very different way, that they're releasing in a very different way.
But I mean, I want to see it now more than I did before it came out. So maybe that word of mouth, the divisiveness, I mean, for some people, granted, definitely a smaller segment of people than the going to the mall movie theater.
I think we're part of the people that are going out to see interesting movies. Yeah. I think people that want to go out and see a mainstream film about this concept, I think by this point, they've heard the B-minus cinema score word of mouth. And I think that's where this movie is going to struggle. I think the urban demos, the city demos that I think are a little bit more used to this type of release from both Alex Garland, from obviously the distributor, I think they'll be a little bit more forgiving, a little bit more curious, like you and I are, Rebecca. But the average moviegoer that does not care about these things, I think that's going to be an uphill battle. We have to see this not as an action movie, not as a big studio release. This is still A24. This is still Alex Garland. It's a completely different set of expectations. And I think that's where that cinema score disconnect is with this title.
Yeah. We have three films coming out this weekend in wide release. The one I'm excited for is the horror film Abigail. That definitely looks like one where the marketing is going to align more with people's expectations. You know, I want to see a little vampire ballerina taking people out in a big-ass castle, and that looks like that's what's going to happen.
That's that shopping mall movie that's going to succeed. It's not going to be the movie about photojournalism that is going to get the high cinema score. I think Vampire Child taking out kidnappers.
By Matt Bettinelli Ulpin and Tyler Gill of Radio Silence. They do good, crazy things happening in big mansions with rich people movies. So, I mean, horror has been doing so well so far this year. It's really, I don't know if I'd say a renaissance, because I don't think we really needed one in terms of the quality of the films, but box office wise, it's definitely been, I think, a major pillar. Daniel, what are we looking at for this one?
Well, we've got a lot to go over there in terms of what we expect from this trio of new releases this weekend. And that segues us nicely into our box office barometer, Rebecca, because as you mentioned, we've got three new releases coming out wide this weekend, and we've got A24 Civil War kind of floating out there with a big question mark on what that drop is going to be after that word of mouth will likely take an impact. Our forecast for the number one film coming out this weekend is going to be Universal's Abigail. We have a forecast range between 20 to 25 million domestic on that opening weekend. Right now, the box office company's Showtime dashboard is putting it at 18% of the weekend showtimes. That is by far the market share leader in terms of all films in the marketplace. That means the number two film of the weekend in our forecast is going to be Guy Ritchie's The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare from Lionsgate. We've got a bigger range here. It can land anywhere between 10 and 20 million on that opening weekend. On the Showtime's dashboard from the box office company, we have it listed as having 15% of that Showtime market share in the United States. And then here's a toss-up, guys. We have to figure out where this is going to end up. Depending on that word of mouth, depending on how those holdover figures end up, we've got Civil War in its second weekend with 11% of the showtimes, including a good chunk of IMAX theaters, and then a new opener. The anime title that we saw 10 minutes of at CinemaCon last week from Crunchyroll, Spy X Family Code White, that also has 11% of the showtimes in the country and has slightly more IMAX showtime. So that IMAX competition on the PLF side split more or less equally, with a little bit of an edge going to the anime title over Civil War. That gives Spy X Family Code White's opening weekend range here between 8 to 12 million, which honestly is probably going to be very similar to where Civil War is going to end up in that hold. I think it's going to be a photo finish here for that last podium spot at the box office.
I think there's a lot up in the air here. Spy X Family, as you mentioned, closed out Crunchyroll's opening day presentation at CinemaCon. It was touted by Crunchyroll as a family-friendly movie. That said, you know, as Chad, as you mentioned in our recap of it, there is more violence than you would typically see in a Western animation, quote-unquote, family movie. Among the family audiences, we don't really know what the market penetration is just in terms of awareness. Anime is always one of those things where it's like, everyone doesn't need to know about it, but the people who like anime and who were going to these movies, they need to know about it. If you don't need to know about it and you're never going to see an anime movie necessarily, that's fine. When you're targeting the family audience, I do wonder how that one shakes out. It seems like it's a harder push.
I think the IMAX bookings tell us something. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm leaning towards having Spy Family Code a little bit higher on that forecast, maybe to the 10 to 12 range, although we can see it falling down to 8 million on that opening weekend. I do think that IMAX commitment tells us something on where the pre-sales
are.
On
their confidence.
And where this can finish. Mm-hmm. Yeah, on the confidence. I mean, at this point, you have those IMAX screens pre-sold. You know where things are going to end up. This one, I think, is going to surprise, but you never know. I think it's all down to what that tumble is on Civil War. I think there's a very high likelihood that the people that really wanted to see Civil War saw it on opening weekend, and the people that were on the fence, that's where that B-minus cinema score, you know, gets me a little worried. Again, it's not on the film's quality. It's on the delivering on the expectations of that marketing campaign after that opening weekend, and I think that's where we might see it tumble.
Even if it does fall in its second week, I think that maybe the A24 marketing strategy didn't completely accurately reflect what the movie is, but I don't think you can look at that opening weekend haul and say that's necessarily a bad thing. It seems, in retrospect, it seems pretty smart.
Yeah, you can't look at a record opening weekend for a studio that has never marketed a movie like this and say it failed when it had, I think, what was it, almost twice.
Amount
of the last record holder? Yeah. That went wide. And again, like we've mentioned a number of times here, A24 isn't known for a 3,000 plus wide release on opening weekend. I think they aced the assignment.
They bet on this one smartly. Yeah.
Yeah. At the expense of, I think, maybe some audience expectations that if it wasn't for that marketing campaign, I'm not sure they would have gone. I think if you market this as a movie about a journalist taking pictures in a plausibly post-apocalyptic United States, I don't think it gets anywhere near that number.
And we're looking at, I mean, we're revving into early summer. I mean, how much holdover are some of these smaller films necessarily going to be able to expect to maintain once we start getting more of those studio tentpoles out?
Yeah, it'll be difficult to sustain that. But listen, it's I think an A+ on the wide release for A24 on this title. Whatever happens next is really going to be down to that word of mouth. So that is our weekend forecast here, brought to you by Box Office Boost this week. Now coming up in our next segment, my interview with Greg Marcus, the CEO of the Marcus Corporation, the parent company of Marcus Theaters. Greg and I talk about dine-in cinemas, trends, everything on CinemaCon. We recorded this in Las Vegas last week, and his reactions to that panel conversation between Matt Baloney from Puck News and Adam Aron, the CEO of AMC Theaters. That is coming up right after the break.
And we've got Greg Marcus here on the podcast. He is the CEO of the Marcus Corporation, and I'm going to call you a lifer, Greg. I mean, you're here forever. You're here with us, and there's a lot of lifers. So that's not a dig, by the way. It's a compliment in this industry. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So it's been a very eventful week here at CinemaCon, but there's a lot of things going on. I always like to catch up with circuits individually to see how they're faring, the things that they're looking at, because this week at CinemaCon, we usually look at the macro picture, what everyone's up to. So let's talk about Marcus Theaters. Where's the circuit right now? How did you finish 23? What's 24 been like?
Well, we finished 23. 23 was strong, and it was nice. It was an interesting finish to the year because we were all pretty nervous given that there was sort of a lack of big tent poles. But what it showed, actually, which is great, I think is so important for the business, is when you put together a strong slate of smaller movies, I wouldn't call these movies small, but
the non-tentpole, non-billion-dollar ones, right?
Yeah. You can really do quite well. And it shows people want to go to the movies. They want to go to different movies. They want to be entertained. And so that was actually a very heartening thing, and what was probably something we were all very nervous about, and especially as we looped into the end of the year with the strikes. And that's a feeling to your question of, okay, how was the first quarter? Well,
not my favorite quarter in the movie business.
I don't think for anyone working in this business, yeah.
It's tough, the strikes. You know, it's hard when you felt, you know, it's funny, we talk about the business being a momentum business, right? You need a cadence of films. You need that momentum, people going to the movies, seeing trailers, feeling good about being at the theater and saying, you know what, I'm going to do this again. And when that halts, you know, it's harder for us as a business. You know, we think there was some discussion about some of the films in the first quarter underperforming a little bit, you know, not the biggest ones, but some of the more medium-sized stuff. I attribute part of that is to people not being in the theaters enough and seeing the trailers and sort of getting, being in that habit. And just like movie going, you know, momentum feels good to them, feels good to us as a, you know, that 23 we came in, and we finally said, okay, this is...
We're on the upswing. Things are going. Things feel good. People...
You know, people are saying good things about us and understanding our importance in the overall tapestry ecosystem, call it what you will, of the entertainment business and understanding our position in it and the importance of that position. And so to take a step backwards, that's hard. It wasn't like we had a great, fun, you know, 3 years prior to that. And so, but now...
You know, hope springs eternal. Spring.
And we've got... new stuff coming, and so everybody's looking forward to what's coming and getting back on track.
Well, talking about that momentum, I think the Marcus Theaters growth story of the last couple of years, I think, has been really interesting in terms of how you've invested in expanding your food and beverage options. You've modernized your theaters. You've innovated in different concepts. There's so many ways right now that exhibitors can, let's say, expand what they're currently doing, right? Beyond just saying, hey, I'm going to open a 16-plex, a 12-plex. You guys are actively in that space. One of the biggest trends that we're hearing about right now are cinema entertainment centers, family entertainment centers, right? You've got a lot of real estate, and instead of putting in 24 screens, you might put in 12 and then a couple of other attractions. What's your approach to something like that?
We haven't done anything with it yet as of late. We're trying different things. We're looking at all of it, you know, in the world of everything that is new again. We have an entertainment center attached to one of our movie theaters. It's in central Wisconsin. We did it. It must be 20 years.
You know, I mean, either we just have really good foresight
or we're back to something that's been here already once before. Now, maybe times are different and it's going to work better or people get a better sense of what will work. But, you know, there were no shortage of theater operators trying this, mm-hmm. you know, 20 years ago and trying to attach an entertainment center to a movie theater. Now, maybe it was too big. Everything was too big. Maybe just a smaller version will be something that works economically. So we're trying things like, you know, we're expanding gamers where we think we can do that where it seems appropriate because we're seeing some success with that. What can we do alternatively with our own boxes in terms of like we have this concept of Wall, which we've had it for a few years now, which is a sports bar We took an auditorium and turned it into a sports bar. We didn't actually take out the seats. Now we've reconfigured some of the seating and we're tinkering with it. It's sort of a little bit of a, it's a lab. Mm-hmm. We're trying to figure it out. And now we already have great food. That's the one thing we do have. We've had it for a long time. That may relate to us being in the hospitality business in general. It's not extravagant food. I don't have to have fork and knife steaks and shrimp scampi to have great. Yeah. How about having just a great hamburger?
Well, I'll tell you this right now. I've been to almost, and my job is covering movie theaters. You guys have the best movie theater pizza. Period. I'll tell you that. I'll do that right now in person. Seriously, I've eaten more meals in movie theaters than I think the average human has. So I'll give you that award.
I appreciate it. I love hearing that. We're very proud of it. Because, you know, we made real investments in doing it. And by the way, I eat it every week. Even if I'm not going to the movies, I built a theater in my house and I grab a pizza because it's so good. But we put deck ovens in all of our theaters. So we didn't just have the conveyor oven.
Right.
It's okay. And it works. But it's really good if you do it in a deck oven. And we have a recipe that we've bought basically from one of the best theater, one of the best pizza guys in Milwaukee where we're headquartered. And, but I'll tell you, if, I don't know if you had our burgers.
I have to try. I'm going to confess something to you. My in-laws live close to your Flower Town Movie Tavern location.
Okay.
I'm not going to confirm or deny publicly that maybe I get a takeout from your dine-in and not even watching a movie. I eat at your movie tavern sometimes if I'm in the area when I visit that. Well, but yeah, it's a lot of innovations that are happening right now. You mentioned the F&B expansion that is happening. Obviously, premium large format's been, I think, let's say the big success story bouncing back from the pandemic. Bigger per caps. Of course, people coming back, they're spending a little bit more. What are the other top line trends that you're seeing from your position?
Well, I think you've hit that, you know, you've nailed it. I mean, it is the PLF is the big thing, that attraction to that kind of format. And we have, from on a relative basis, probably the most PLFs of any circuit in the country. I will not take the credit myself, but I will tell you that Mark Grahams, who runs our theater business, I will give him credit for inventing the PLF. If you know Mark, Mark's been around.
Another lifer.
Over 50, yeah, yeah. Over 50 years. He knows the business. And he was, you know, and originally some of the big, he started working, he came up in the big houses, you know, with 1,000 seats and the things like that, you know, from the regional mid-sort part of our of a theatrical history. And we were trying some other large format stuff. This was 25, 30 years ago. And Mark said, you know, we should build
a big theater like was our theater was called the South Town. We should build a big auditorium like the South Town and attached to one of our current theaters and put in, you know, 500 seats and it'll be our presentation house. And that was the birth of the Ultra Screen. And that's what we call, that's our proprietary format. Nobody had done it. And it was a huge success. And by the way, it was so long ago, we've already torn that theater down.
You already upgraded the concept.
That theater's obsolete. I mean, that whole complex was obsolete, had become obsolete and we moved to a different location. But it was, that's how long we've been doing it for. So we try to have one and two PLFs in each of our complexes so that we can play, you know. We didn't have to pick between Barbie and Oppenheimer, for example.
Right.
We had enough PLFs to cover them both. And that's the big trend. And people spending more on food and beverage, you're absolutely right. And so that, again, that's sort of something we've been working on for a long time. So we were there ready for it.
Now, something that we also have to talk about is the recovery. There was a panel here this week at CinemaCon where Matt Bologna from Puck News was chatting with number of executives, but really it was a one-on-one interview with Adam Aron from CEO is how it ended up playing out. He mentioned something about the recovery as a whole. He's saying that Adam Aron was the CEO of AMC, that it seems like cinemas are lagging behind other out-of-home entertainment or leisure destinations. Now, you have a great perspective on this because you're not only overseeing the cinema side, you're a hospitality company. You've got a hotel business and a restaurant business. How is that cinema recovery compared to those other business lines you have?
It is, Adam's right, it's lagging.
Mm-hmm.
Those other businesses have fully recovered. We're back to pre-pandemic with inflation.
We keep
going back, when can we get to 2019? But 2019 shouldn't be the bogey if you really want, if we're really be honest. You know, I mean, I'd be happy to get to 2019. And we'll fix cost structure so it doesn't, but we've got to get back to that, mm-hmm. that level. It's not because people don't want to go to the movies. It's not because people have said, I'm not going anymore. I don't want to leave my house. You know, you look at last summer was almost 2019 levels.
Right.
And it was because the number of releases were close to 2019 levels. It is pure math at this point. If you're going to release and you can pick what level you want to define as a wide release, 3,000 screens, 2,000 screens, but we need to get back to the cadence of pre-pandemic, of that level of films being released into the marketplace. And it's tough. They didn't talk about it with Disney yesterday, but with Fox being absorbed into Disney, we've lost a bunch of films.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the hope is that others will start to fill in that gap. But that and then just an overall decline in production, we aren't getting the same number of films. But if you get the same number of films, we will do the business. People do want to go.
And I think another point in that was raised in that panel, this is raised by Matthew Belloni, who was moderating, is the question of figuring out if this is going to be an $8 billion industry moving forward or a $10 billion industry moving forward, and who can survive in those scenarios.
Yeah, that's something that I thought was something that probably needs to be corrected. And there are a lot of people in the room, although many of them know. But for those that aren't as familiar with our industry, you know, yeah, the comment was, well, only certain companies at $9 billion won't make it. Everybody else is okay. That is, I think, absolutely inaccurate. Now, look, some companies will make it. But if you want a business that's thriving, that, by the way, and it's not like people are minting money and buying private islands in Hawaii or anything like that. Yeah. But if you want a business that attracts capital so that there can be reinvestment in that business, Hollywood, if anybody from Hollywood is listening, if you want your theater, if you believe theaters are important, I think all the data, forgive what we say, we're all biased, but the data, the numbers are speaking and saying, you know what, films, that if you're going to build a building, that doesn't make sense to just fill 10 stories of the building. You want to fill all 12. And what I mean by that is, if you're going to skip theatrical, you're skipping leasing two floors of your building in a way. You're saying, oh, 10 floors is good for me. I didn't mean to, I built this floor. If you want to maximize the revenue of your property that you have produced, you should, the data shows, play it theatrically and then play it on PVOD and then SVOD and then on streaming. You know, and then probably fast TV or whatever comes up. Just the windowing process, sell the same product to the same customer over and over again because they want to buy it and they will continue to buy it. And and on top of that, if you say, well, you know, and we know we're seeing data that the films that are in theaters perform better on streaming. If that's your main focus, well, I got to get my streamer working. Well, you know what? Almost an imbued sense of you know, good housekeeping seal of approval, or just the familiarity, you know, when you go through and you're looking at your 500 tiles, you're trying to figure out what to watch and praying the algorithm just gave you the right thing. If you say, ooh, I heard of that.
Yeah.
And if you say more of that, you're saying, and yeah, this service has stuff that I know that they're not just, you know, something just sent to streaming is going to be sort of, I think, I sent it to video for the most part. And a lot of it, some series are different. But movies, people want to have some familiarity with them. So all the data
shows there's a guy, the entertainment strategy guy, who does his column. Mm-hmm. If you read his stuff, he's analyzing it up and down. He's saying, if you are not sending your movies in theaters, you're missing a huge opportunity. You are only, he didn't say this, I did, you're only filling 10 stories of your 12-story building.
Yeah.
And you should fill the other two. And so, you know, the business needs to then, you know, we need $9 billion will not attract capital. We won't be able to reinvest in those theaters that you want to promote your big films, to promote your streamers, to promote your video on demand, to have all these ancillary markets. If we're only $9 billion, we can't support the infrastructure that's been built.
Yeah.
And it's not like this is other fallacy that's going on that I almost is. You know, we got to shrink from 40,000 to 30,000 screens. Well, you know, it's not easily done. It's not like there's not like a Fry's and a Best Buy across the street from each other. There's not, you know, an AMC and a Marcus or an AMC Regal. I mean, there are some examples where they are really close, but for the most part, they are not. And so if the Fry's goes out of business, all those customers go start buying their TVs at Best Buy. Well, it's not like that in the movie business. If a movie theater closes, it's generally in its own area, especially some of the more rural, smaller stuff. And some of that stuff closes, that's just going to be lost growth. Now, there's not a whole big number in that, but it's not like this thing where, well, Someone had said, well, but if you close those, everybody else will get healthy. That's just not accurate. We have to figure out how to close 5 to 10 screens in a 20-plex to figure out how to get the other ones healthy, but you still have the real estate that you bought and you're going to have to turn it into, I don't know, is it going to be a family entertainment center?
And that's more investment. And that's a big risk. You know, what happens if it's a fad? What happens to that, right? You know, it's something that Chris Johnson shared in this podcast last week from Classic Cinemas, also in the Midwest. There are things that aren't a fad. Air conditioning isn't a fad. Recliners, comfort is not a fad. But in terms of some of the bells and whistles, you have to upgrade those entertainment game machines every number of years. It's not a cheap conversion going from 20 screens to 12.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's one of the beauties of our business is that the product is for changes and is fresh every week. That's such a unique thing. People don't even talk about that. It's so cool if you think about it. It's like, if you were to put in bowling, nothing against bowling, but if you put in bowling, it's bowling. It doesn't
forever. It is bowling for decades and decades.
Oh, yeah. Forever, right? So those doing it. But when you have a movie theater, you know, one week it's, you know, Godzilla, and the next week is Deadpool. You know, it's such a unique thing to be able to do. And the other point that was made, I think, yeah, I mean, just look at in 18 and 19, we weren't over screen. Might have been, but we weren't really.
Right.
But here's the thing nobody talks about. Seats. The reduction of seats has been huge in our business. Now, that doesn't change your real estate footprint. Doesn't help the argument, well, let's get out, because if you built the building, I mean, but the number of seats in our business has been reduced substantially by recliners.
You're optimizing. That's what it is. You're looking at your occupancy rates and you're figuring out, hey, the people that are here, how can I make that more comfortable for them rather than put them in a 3/4 empty auditorium, right? It's such an interesting evolution of the business. And we see a lot of what might happen in the future here in Vegas for CinemaCon. And I want to ask you, what's your biggest takeaway?
What I'm heartened by is just the attitude. No, it's nobody is sitting around. What I just said about the importance of theatrical, I think there's a pretty good understanding of that.
Mm-hmm.
That nobody is around here saying, boy, do we really need you? You know, it's not a question of if, it's a question of how.
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to get more films? How do we, most people say what I just said is because I'm not making stuff up. And the data is saying theatrical is important to this whole overall entertainment ecosystem. The stuff that how it gets into the zeitgeist. How you get, I mean, we're all still, I know we're a little bit in our own little cloistered world talking about Barbenheimer, but I think a lot of the world still sort of, that's resonating, that whole,
yeah.
That movie, that set of movies is resonating, or if it was The Sound of Freedom was resonating with people, you know, stuff resonates. I can't tell you the biggest movies that some of the streamers who show were being nameless.
Yeah.
You know, but nobody's talking about it. I was sort of wondering, this is the biggest movie on the streamer. And I'm like, I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just because streaming is important and it's TV. It's the replacement for TV. And that's always been an important way for people to entertain themselves in their home. And that's great, but it's not the same.
No, not at all. And I think that's something that we've been really echoing and hearing a lot here this week, the importance of creating cultural moments and creating I'm there moments. Now, to do that, we need to get viewers back in theaters. And of course, that's the part of the equation that we've been retooling. Now, you've been a very, let's say, visible executive in this industry with Marcus Theaters. You make sure to get out there and to promote this. You're very hands-on in reaching the viewer directly in your local communities. So I do want to ask you that. If you've seen any difference or changes in reaching the viewer of 2024 versus reaching the viewers of 2019 to come to your theaters?
Well, I'll tell you that for us personally, the biggest thing is, you know, we has been TikTok.
Really? Yeah.
Like, okay, this is, it's the most interesting thing. Social media is important and you've got to do social media stuff, but it's really hard, especially like, you know, for one of the reasons, I know, I'm on our screens. Now, one of the reasons I went on our screens, it originally was because United Way was doing a community campaign and they asked me to go on to make the pitch. I did. And I said, you know, I've always sort of thought it'd be nice, interesting for people to understand, you know, they're coming to the movies for Superman. They're coming for, you know, for Spider-Man. They're coming for Iron Man. They're coming for Barbie, Oppenheimer. Will you pick your thing? That's why they come to them.
No offense, significantly more attractive people than us. That's who they want to see on screen.
Not even close. Am I too old to be on the screen already? I was never that good even younger. But yeah, now I'm just like grandpa on the screen. But the idea of sort of personalizing it and welcoming somebody was an important idea to me. And could we do that? And now it's interesting. Kids have grown up with me and now they're in their 20s and 30s and and I'm like almost nostalgic for them, which is really weird. But the social media stuff, so that, you know, if we sell 20, 25 million tickets, we are, you know, think about the other people we're touching. If I could get, you know, I'm never forget my social media people at first said, well, you should be on Instagram. Okay, I've got an Instagram account. How many followers could we get to? I think I was like a 5,000 at the time. We think you could get you to 20,000. I said, well, that's nice. You could put some stuff up on there if you want. But think about how many people we have to talk to get to move the dial.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but that doesn't mean don't keep trying stuff. So about a year ago, year and a half ago, they said, let's start doing some TikTok stuff. Now,
okay.
And if you've ever seen me on screen, I do some funny little goofy stuff. It's
nothing compared to the nutty stuff they have me do on TikTok.
Greg, I'm gonna have to open a TikTok account just to see you on there. I had no idea this was happening.
Oh, this is the beauty of it all. No one over 17, no one over 22 ever sees me. If I saw what's going on TikTok, they would think I was a lunatic.
It's a different life altogether. I love it.
It is, I can't say I even know what resonates. They just the social media people say, but it's the Marcus that uses TikTok. It's not even mine. But I'm like half the I'm in about half of them. And the Marcus and they just say do this. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, I feel like your torture doll. I feel like the doll's like a toy. The kid, the neighbor at Toy Story, in the original Toy Story, was just throwing all the dolls. I'm like, is that what I am to you? Because you are all making me do all this crazy stuff. But we got in the TikToks that I was in last year, we got about 10 million impressions.
Wow.
We have a few of them that have done 2 million, views. So somehow that has been a way of talking. And I have to admit, I was very terrified to read the comments.
Oh, no, you read the comments. Greg, don't read the comments. Never read the comments.
Oh, it's actually shocking.
Okay.
You're really on the goat.
All right, you know what? That's a positive
thing, by the way.
I guess you could like have to take pity on an old person on TikTok. It seems like it's old to be on TikTok. But
they're really nice. And then they write things like, oh, I've been meaning to go see that movie. Because we do stuff, we try to, we mix it up. Some stuff is what's on trend on TikTok, stuff that's movie related, or a mixture of them. And someone says, or we did one of the hamburgers. And like people are writing, the burgers are really good. They're like, you should go. And so the idea of reminding people to go to the movies and having a little follow that it's easy for us to do it. And so that's, so it has changed how we reach people. And if TikTok goes away then we'll move on to whatever's next.
Yeah. You jump to the next one. Greg, thank you so much for your time. And looking forward to everything else coming out from Marcus Theaters in the coming months.
Great. Thanks, Dan.
And that was Greg Marcus, CEO of the Marcus Corporation, joining us here at the Box Office Podcast. We recorded that interview from our suite in Las Vegas covering CinemaCon. If you want to catch up on everything that went on at the biggest convention covering the theatrical exhibition sector, you can catch up to our daily episodes that were released all last week on a daily basis. To catch up to our future episodes, all you have to do is subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. We will be back next week with another episode, as we always do on Thursday mornings. Thanks again for joining us. We will talk to you again next week.